Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is a little bit abnormal. Normally, I do not do a pre-recording monologue prior to the podcast because I really like to have the guests stand on their own. But I made a bit of a mistake in this podcast. Actually, I've made this mistake in most of my podcasts. I forgot to do a proper introduction of today's guest. And I realized about 15 minutes in that I hadn't even introduce this gentleman. So today's guest is Jorge M. Sanchez, and he's a great guy. He runs a room at Cafe Frascati in downtown San Jose. All of his comics love the room, love the way he runs it. And, you know, we have a debt of gratitude to him. For this month, he's running a program where he is accepting donations for a local shelter. You know, we get into it in the podcast, so I'm not going to really dwell on it here, but we have a significant problem on our hand here in the Bay Area with you know, the homeless situation and people just not being able to make ends meet. And it's been a really rough winter. We've had a lot of rain, and so the people without shelter have really suffered. So he's trying to do a little bit of fundraising via the tip jar, and I really encourage anyone who is in the downtown San Jose area to stop by Wednesday night and check it out. He's also, you know, to just say he is an MC and host open mic is definitely undercutting what this guy does. He's a photographer. He's a musician. He's into different aspects of the art community here in San Jose. So it was a great time chatting with him, and I hope you enjoy.
Get into that.
Go for it.
So I broadcast everywhere.
What do you mean? Like SoundCloud?
Oh, sound. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, broadcast for recording, I'm wherever. I literally have a table in the back of my truck.
Yeah.
If someone wants to record, go, let's do it. Just record.
Oh, I see. No. I mean, where are you putting this, this so podcast? Like what platforms? I'm sorry. Yeah.
So the platform is Squarespace.
Squarespace. So an actual website.
It's an actual website. Mm-hmm. So then I just set the RSS feed to iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher, and that's really it right now.
Right,
but
okay.
I think those are the good major players. How about your podcast?
Mine's available on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, iTunes,
okay,
and a couple other ones that that's related to Google, like Castbox and other.
I think once you get the RSS feed there, then you're good. With it going wherever else it needs to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was kind of thinking, not only do I want to talk to people, but I also want to blog. The blogging is something that's like, I don't know, it's hit and miss with me. I don't sit down in front of the keyboard and just think through my thoughts enough to be consistent with it. But I love just going out and talking with people and, you know, figuring out what's going on, getting to know people.
Uh-huh.
So that's why the podcast.
How long have you been podcasting now?
This podcast is new. This podcast is since February, but I've been podcasting for other things for a little bit now, a couple years.
Oh, awesome, dude.
Yeah. I have a podcast with my buddy, which has been really hit and miss, called Two Beers and a Book.
Two Beers and a Book. I love the title.
Yeah. So we're both kind of book geeks. So whatever's trending on books, we'll read it and then drink beers and talk about it.
Oh, man. You guys fast readers?
Because
I love reading books, but I'm pretty slow at it. It takes me a while to get through a book.
I think I'm a fast reader, but also the era of the audiobook helps.
Oh, I see.
Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So then I can be driving and listening to the book and whatnot. So we do audiobooks and also reading, but I'm a pretty fast reader. But the problem with that podcast, what I was going to say is he works for an organization where we've had to prune back some episodes.
You had to prune back?
Yeah. So we only have nine episodes.
Is that an industry term?
Well,
oh, yeah, to pull back. I'm sorry. Yeah. My hearing's off. I apologize. I'm going deaf. No. I honestly think I'm going deaf, dude.
Yeah.
At work,
no, I am too.
All I do is plug in earphones in my head. In my ears.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm going deaf in some way.
Yeah.
So you got to pull back. Oh, I see.
We had about 20, 25 episodes, and then he goes, hey, what did we say in this episode? What did we say in that episode? I'm like, dude, I don't know. We're just shooting the shit for hours on end, right?
Right.
So I could have said anything, and he goes, okay, well, you know, the legal department of whatever organization I work for was talking to me about this, that, and the other, and we have to be careful about what we say here and say here. And I go, you know what? Let me just pull it all back. And then we haven't been able to sync up schedules for like the last 3 weeks. So that's a slow going.
See, that's the hardest part about podcasting is scheduling. Trying to get guests in, scheduling, yeah. and accommodating, which I'm very grateful that you have accommodated me to be on this podcast. I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
I'm grateful to you. I'm more grateful to you. We're going to have a gratitude competition.
I'm the guest here. I'm grateful to you. Trust me, I've been on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the work that goes on the other side of trying to pull it all together, you know, from you know, just ask. I would get such anxiety.
Yeah,
just asking someone to be a guest on my podcast. Then I'll get anxiety when they're sitting in front of me. What the fuck are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, can I cuss on this podcast?
I actually prefer cussing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you're not cussing, then I think, am I supposed to not? When another person doesn't cuss, then I think I shouldn't cuss. Yeah. And then we get in a circle of not cussing. So if we get the fucking cussing out of the fucking way as quickly as fucking possible.
See, I've been there too. We're like, do I cuss? So I get anxiety. Asking someone, I get anxiety when they're sitting in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and then I get anxiety afterwards.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh my God, they're going to like it, what they said, this and that. Because, and you mentioned something that's also important of podcast is the legality of it. People forget that in some form, even if it's like shooting the shit podcast, it's good to have like a, whatchamacallit, a consent form? Is that what those are called?
I have
a release form.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it because I had situations where I had guests threaten me lawsuits if I released an episode, and like, believe it or not, and what saved my ass is I had release forms. Like, hey, I mean, I'm point is, I will not release the episode because I respect you, but I'm not obligated. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's those kind of things that people don't think of when they're starting a podcast is those possibilities. So
I did think of that, and I Googled around, and basically what people said is. Consent form is the most ironclad way to do it.
Yeah.
But also the fact that you invited someone to talk on a podcast that they know is on the internet. And then afterwards, after you say, okay, well, we're done.
Yeah.
And you say, you good with what we said? And they say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically, that is a consent and it would probably hold up in law.
Yeah. You know what I actually used to do? Is I actually would say, while recording, do you give me permission to record your voice?
I think that's what I'll probably start doing. I've missed that on a few occasions.
So I've done that a couple of times where like I'm on the go and I don't have time to print out the release form.
That
works too.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is I understand when you're making a podcast, it's not fucking easy as it. I mean, it's fun. It can be fun.
It's fun.
But it's sure. I mean, it's a lot like stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the first couple episodes should be fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the real test is when once you reach like the 15th episode and let's see. And like stand up, like the first couple times you do stand, fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But by the time you reach the 10th fucking dive bar mic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, do you really like being there? You know what I'm saying? Do you really enjoy the process? Yeah,
yeah. This stings a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you do, then you know it's for you.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you say that because I think for me, the barrier with the podcast is literally 30 episodes.
Uh-huh.
It's the other two podcasts I did. Now, the other podcast I did was for another hobby I have. Super geek stuff. Remote control planes and helicopters.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's pretty geeky. But that's cool stuff, though.
It's geeky. It's very white. It's very middle-aged white privileged hobby to have, right?
I wouldn't go that far, but sure.
Yeah.
I took your word for it.
We're an eclectic bunch, but overwhelmingly.
I don't know much Latinos flying planes.
No. Yeah. So,
Is it over here in Campbell? There's the Crystal Ray area.
Rancho San Antonio. Which is, we fly there. Smaller electrics, but we had a club over in Morgan Hill, but that got shut down with 3 years ago the flood, and there was another field that was shut down. Anyway, I don't want to bore you with all this stuff.
I find that stuff fascinating, dude.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
It's very technical, and I thought it would be a situation where I'd have people lining up to talk about whatever, like business owners and other people doing it.
It's a very niche market. You're right.
So niche, and people really didn't want to get on podcasts. So it was a battle. It was a battle.
Really?
And I got up to maybe 27, 28, and I had so many people canceling on me.
Yeah.
And literally even people saying, yeah, I'll do it. And then the day of I'd start up, I would do remote sessions a lot, like a Zoom session or a Join Me or whatever, and just record it from my computer.
Yeah.
And people just weren't showing up. And then I finally go, I was like you. It wasn't even about anxiety asking people to join the podcast. It was just that, okay, I ask 100 people and 10 people say okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. This is just kind of like a sales. You're spray and pray. Talk to as many people as you can and see who's down to do it.
Yeah.
But then of those 10, when you have five of them say they're going to do it and then cancel, it starts to sting.
It does.
And I started taking it personal, which is on me. I shouldn't have taken it personal.
It's hard not to. I've been there. I've been there, man. It's hard not to take personal. And then a sense of you builds a grudge, which you shouldn't, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You shouldn't build a grudge.
But I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. So with this one, here's what I'm thinking with this one. So,
well, you're just talking with comedians with this one, right?
Yeah.
Comedians love to talk.
I think so.
Actually, comedians were my favorite. No, don't remember, I love all my guests.
Yeah.
I talked to a lot of artists and filmmakers and writers of all kinds. But comedians, when I knew I booked a comedian, there's a good chance that I was going to have a fun time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a special bondship, even if you don't know each other. But if you know that... If each other do comedy, there's definitely a bond there.
There is.
That you could just cut through the bullshit and just have a real talk.
Real talk. And then on top of that, if I have a portable recording device, this is why I keep the shit in the truck. Why not just do it at the open mics? Because here's where the idea came from. I was like, well, number one, when I first started doing this back in August, you have to think, am I going to like the crowd, right? I'm 43. This point, is it going to be too is it just going to be too counterculture for me and it's going to be a shock? So I have to decide, is this, like you said, is this something for me? Well, within my, I don't know, fifth or sixth open mic, I started talking with people and I started really enjoying the process. So I go, you know what, I like the crowd. You know, we're, the comedian has to be a ball buster by nature, so ball busting is great. But everyone's really kind of sweet too. There's a certain sweetness about this community.
Yeah.
That I'm sure people will bust my balls for using that word.
No. I think everybody's very. Everybody's generally very nice.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are sensitive.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, there's also egos involved, which can be difficult. But the majority, I feel, especially in the local comedy scene,
the local scene,
are very much, you know, sensitive, down to earth guys and gals or anybody else in between.
Yeah, yeah.
I really hear what you're saying.
So then I said, well, you know what? I want to keep doing open mics, but then I also have this other passion of podcasting. I go, well, the heavyweight champions of the world in podcasting are all comics. So I go, I thought the same thought you had. I go, well, what if I'm not talking to the headliners, but what if I have a lot of guys in it with me right now who were just drinking a beer talking, right? Uh-huh. And we're literally waiting 40 minutes for our turn to go up for our 6 minutes. Or sometimes we go up and then we wait around and listen to wait for one of our buddies. And I go, this is opportune recording time. Obviously, I can't record in the bar. But let me just get a remote recording device, and then boom, we'll have our conversation. So far, it's worked. This is only episode 9.
Oh, sweet! So, number 9.
Yeah,
dig it.
We're super early days.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's been good. It's been good. But what I wanted to also bring up is some stuff you're doing. So I've been born and raised in the Bay Area, and there's always been, to some extent, you know, you go to the city, you go to different parts of San Jose, Oakland. We've always had our homeless population, our underserved population. And it's something you've kind of been numb to growing up in the Bay Area. But I have to say, within the last 3 to 5 years, maybe longer, I don't know. I've been noticing 3 to 5 years, it feels like we have some kind of catastrophic problem on our hand.
Definitely.
With homeless and underserved population, and it's not even in the parts where we think, you know, normally there would be homeless people, not just San Francisco, although San Francisco feels just overwhelmed with homeless population, not just certain parts of San Jose, it's all over San Jose. I actually work in Cupertino, and, you know, there's homeless population there, and I think you talked about the sensitivity, you know, being kind of a, what I would consider a very empathetic human being walking around going, what is going on? I can feel it. There's a palpable, like, we have a crisis on our hands. Mm-hmm. And the average person might be feeling this, might be thinking it, but we don't really know what to do about it, right? So, like, yeah, I can give out a buck or two when someone's actually panhandling, but that's not putting any kind of dent in the actual problem. So I wanted to get you on because I know you've done two things so far. You've right now you're in the middle of a blanket drive.
Yes.
That you're going to be accepting donations at the rooms you run in.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also did a sleeping bag drive. So can you go into a little bit about what the sleeping bag drive was like back in late 2018, and then also what's going on with the blanket drive right now?
Sure, sure. I also want to start with the notion you talked about how the increasing homeless population is in the Silicon Valley, or in the Bay Area in general.
Yeah.
And it's definitely true.
Yeah.
It is no surprise that the one of the biggest populations of homelessness is definitely here in the country. If you look at if you look at the statistics,
okay,
we are up there with LA and New York.
Okay.
And I think there's something to be said about that, especially with the gap of wealth that's here. And they're definitely everywhere. I went to San Jose State University, which is the only university that's an open university.
Mm-hmm.
So we had you could see the homeless population in the university, because a lot of universities, you know, are usually walled off, or they're at a better location where, you know, it's more affluent. But at San Jose State, you know, going to school there, I definitely saw that.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I ran for Scotty, and to be honest with you, when I was running the podcast, the GMS podcast, I've always wanted to make a charity branch to it.
Okay.
Because I had different branches to the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always wanted to, in some way, give back to the community.
Okay.
But I just couldn't really figure out how. You know, I had some people involved, make plans. And so after the podcast, I decided to maybe I should gear it towards the comedy side, which is for Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, the thing about what makes for Scotty special is it's so different from so many open mics. I think by also adding a charity, you know, branch to it would add more to the uniqueness and hopefully in some way make the performers more engaged with the community as well. So that leads us to the sleeping bag drive, which is actually started by Pete Munoz. Pete Munoz runs Woodhams.
Yeah.
And for a couple of years now, he would be the one orchestrating the sleeping bag drive.
Okay.
At Woodhams. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this is a good, you know, opportunity to help him, but also see like if it can work out for Scotty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. So after working with him, it's been an awesome experience.
Okay.
I think a lot. What I didn't expect, and which I'm always grateful of seeing, and I don't know if I'm surprised, but I definitely saw a different side of him, is how much comedians gave towards the charity drive.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never expect them to, because I'm like, it's about the audience.
Yeah.
But I saw how much they were behind this thing, and it was very inspiring in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Including you. I think you put in a couple bucks.
I try to anytime, you know, regardless of whether it's going to a good cause or not, I try to, if a MC has a tip jar, because I really appreciate people who run rooms, so I always try to tip. But yeah, no, I every time when that during that November and December, I always tried to end my set with, "Hey, you know, if you can, everyone, please tip, because we've got a problem here, and no one person has the solution. But if we all kind of, you know, chip in," so I would use like 15 seconds, which I did get heckled a few times.
Oh no,
but it's fine.
Yeah.
But where I would try and stop being a funny guy and just say, "Hey, there's a tip jar. Munoz has already mentioned it, whatever. But if everyone can, you know, chip in a little bit."
And to add to that is like, for Scotty, I don't do the tip jar thing usually.
Yeah.
I don't do that
because
you know, those baristas, I much rather go the tips to them.
Good point.
And so for Scotty, it's definitely a labor of love.
Okay.
But, you know, going through the sleeping bag drive.
Yeah.
It was a great learning experience.
Okay.
Just get my feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we raised over $2,000.
Nice.
And Pete Munoz himself bought sleeping bags and gave them out.
Nice.
And it seemed like it was a big help.
Mm-hmm.
So that was awesome.
He was just walking around handing them to.
Yeah, he was driving around town.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was just an awesome experience. It was great helping him out, and it gave me the confidence to kind of go in, and start a charity drive that's for Scotty. What's the word I'm looking for?
Centric.
Centric, yeah. Because like I said, when I was putting together for Scotty, I wanted to be much more than just an average open mic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is why I implement, you know, segments, comedy debates.
We're going to get into that. I love all that stuff.
Stuff that kind of, you know, embraces all types of comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, it challenges the performers of really coming up with stuff and stepping out of the box and try material in a different way. And so anyway, so cut to now. So I, like every other month or every couple months, I'm going to try to dedicate a cause.
Mm-hmm.
So in this month, for the month of March, we are working with the Housing Supportive Services. Yeah, it's a family shelter in East San Jose.
Okay.
They take in a lot of people yearly.
Okay.
And they provide a lot of great services, such as, you know, working with them with the finances, with job searches. They also provide free daycare.
You know, that's huge,
right?
Because daycare is so much money out
here. So something, you know, to put the people in need, their kids, somewhere safe while they can concentrate on trying to get back on their feet.
Yeah.
And I call them up and I'm like, hey, you know, we did a charity drive before. I'd like to do another one for your organization.
Mm-hmm.
But here's another thing when making a charity drive is you got to be very specific.
Okay.
You know, because this is what I learned from Pete Munoz. It's like, you could have just raised money for the homeless.
Yeah.
But if you get more specific, people are more inclined to give. At the same time, I believe you make more of an impact because you're helping them out with a certain aspect that they need.
Of the needs.
Yeah. Right. Instead of trying to get everything, which is almost impossible with the budget we're dealing with.
Right, right.
So I call them up and be like, hey, what do you need? And they're like, well, we're short on blankets.
Okay.
I was like, okay, perfect. So we'll make it a blanket drive.
Nice.
And they've been super accommodating as well. And they're... They've been helping us promote.
Oh, nice.
And on top of that, I also got to say that the Frascati, the official Frascati marketing team are also helping out.
Wow.
So it's been really awesome. It's good to have those things, you know, helping you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so on my side, it's just, you know, once again, just trying to make the best mic I can and trying to just spread the word and awareness of, like, all month long, you know, help us, you know, provide some blankets to this family shelter, you know,
beautiful,
to keep some people warm.
Well, I much appreciate it. I think it's, if all of us did a little bit like this, maybe we can put a dent into it. Like I said, you know, a lot of times it's so easy in this day and age for all of us to just look at, you know, government has to fix this. And you'd like to think maybe they're at least thinking about it or trying to work on it. But at the same token, I don't even know if government is enough. This is something where you're going to need multiple charitable donations. You're going to need community and you're going to need government, whether it be local government or state government or whatever, to try and help out with this problem. Because like I said, this just from my subjective observations, this seems like it's getting really bad. And I know it probably has a lot to do with the wealth gap in the Bay Area, right? We have
so many things. I mean, especially after the 2008 housing bubble.
Yes.
So many people got evicted around here.
Yeah.
And some people moved away from the area.
Yeah.
And those kind of factors, I don't know how much we can change that.
Right.
But what I do believe, because you remind me of a certain notion that governments, you know, the government itself is just being at a good level of operations hard enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And a lot of charities are usually, you know, national charities, which is nice.
Yeah.
But I like to focus on stuff locally because I'm a big believer in local government. I'm a big believer that.
Me too.
You know, making the changes, being part of the change or being part of the help locally, you can make a bigger impact and kind of lead by example.
Yes. From organizational standpoint, smaller is always more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
My belief anyway, and my observations and my experiences. That's really cool. So speaking of Frascati, how long have you been doing that open mic?
Too long.
Too long?
Too long.
Okay, so how did you go from saying, I like doing open mic stand-up comedy to where I'm going to host a room? Because, again...
By the way, I did it all wrong.
I
really did it all wrong.
Okay.
It's a miracle... The Frascati comedy night is still a thing. It's truly a miracle.
Okay.
Because so many opportunities where it could have been, you know, shut down.
Okay.
And on top of that, the average life expectancy for a open mic, is usually a year.
Right.
A life expectancy of a mic that's in a cafe is less than a couple months.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're going on how many years?
Almost 5 years now.
Wow.
Right. So we're doing something right.
Yes.
But it was a rocky start. Because the biggest mistake I think I did was I started a mic too early in my comedy so-called career.
Okay.
I think because...
How long had you been doing stand-up?
A couple months. I was so green.
You were an eager beaver.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what happened was I started open mic. I mean, I started comedy at San Jose State.
Okay.
And the only mic around near the university was for Scotty.
Okay.
And then from there, we learned that there was the Caravan and Woodhams.
Yeah.
Right? So I was a couple months in, and the mic at Frascati was on Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a general open mic, so anybody.
Right.
And we had a good time. We got chummy with the people there. We got you know, we were really cool with the baristas.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to give credit to Alicia Bogart. She was the manager there at the time. And she's like, we got too many comedians taking over musicians' time on Tuesdays.
Mm.
You know, so we're thinking of of just making a night dedicated to comedy.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
I had a burp.
Yeah. Post-production.
Right. So I was like, you know, give me a day because I really don't know what I would be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stepped on it.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? Why not? Because by that time, I had experience in film production. So putting together events is nothing new to me.
Okay.
On top of that, you know, I was also, you know, vice president of a club. I co-founded other clubs at De Anza. So
you had administrative chops.
Yeah, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, yeah.
Chops, I don't know. But I had experience.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I was totally in love with comedy at the time. And, and I was like, you know what? Maybe there's something I could apply.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it on. And I really didn't have any other mic to emulate besides Woodhams and Caravan.
Okay.
Which are both dive bars.
Yes.
So I tried it their way and it just was not working out.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it was I burnt out pretty fast.
Okay.
And there was not the and this is the lesson that hopefully it will lead in a bit. So after maybe not even a year,
mm-hmm.
Shit. I mean, how deep do you want to go with this? But
the
point
time.
Is, yeah, point is time. Because I was green,
mm-hmm.
nobody knew who the hell I was.
Yeah.
And you know, some people might've taken offense. They're like, who's this new guy?
You jumped the line.
I guess I jumped the line. So okay. Off the bat, I really didn't get much love from the other open mic hosts. So that's where you rely on your support system and your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they really put it through with me.
Okay.
And on top of that, we didn't have performers.
Yeah.
So here we are, Tuesday night, packed house, packed performers. Now we started comedy night, and like it was literally, you know, me, fucking around for like 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. So it took
no pressure with only a month's worth of material.
Right. So it was pretty bonkers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it would have been better if I did comedy for like a year or something, year or two, then, you know, would have handled it a lot better. And again, I was sensitive. And there's, when you start comedy, there's a lot of growing pains in the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's something that also, you know, kind of, made it kind of hard because my friends were hitting up so many mics on a Wednesday night.
Mm.
I couldn't because I was obligated to stay and run this mic.
Oh, right.
So
Wednesday seems to be kind of a peak in the open mic.
Right.
From the calendar, the bacon calendar. Anyway,
right. So already I feel like I was falling behind. I didn't feel, you know, nobody really knew who I was because I couldn't really travel.
You were looking out to others. You were looking at everyone else's metrics.
Yeah.
And comparing yourself, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it just gets emotionally and mentally exhausting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really burnt out.
Okay.
So, and then on top of that, Frascati is located in the SoFo Market,
mm-hmm.
where it's a very art scene.
Yeah.
Very art and music centric.
Yeah.
And
it's a hip spot.
And Frascati was the very first to really provide a full comedy night in that area.
Okay.
And I felt like there was a little bit of, I didn't feel like we had a very good welcoming, mat from the other, how can I say this?
Establishments.
Establishments.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because Frascati was very much respected by artists and by poets and by...
I get it.
And by...
Because the open mic night was mostly maybe like spoken word.
Right.
Or... maybe a folk performer.
Right, right. So now they're
that's
like
a whole different
so now they're like, oh my god, why are they bringing dick jokes to Frascati? In some ways we were downgrading the establishment.
You were slumming up the joint.
Yeah.
So go ahead and get back into it.
All right. So pretty much.
Yeah.
First hard steps making Frascati.
Yeah.
So again, starting off too new.
Yeah.
At a cafe.
Yeah.
And just dealing with the whole scene there and getting complaints from management. I'm like, hey, you know.
Oh, the material goes too blue.
Right. Like the business. It's, yeah. You know, as much as you love doing anything at a mic, you know,
yeah.
It is a business and they don't want to lose business.
Yeah.
So I
from
just
the potty mouth comedian.
Right. Yeah. And so I got burnt out.
Okay.
So I think maybe after a year or so,
mm-hmm.
I was like, I had it. I'm just going to hand it out to someone else.
Okay.
And I gave it up to someone else, a more veteran comic.
Yeah.
And
is that Victor?
I did not want to say.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine.
I can edit that.
But I'll defend Victor though, because Victor was going through a lot at the time. So anyway, so I gave it off to Victor.
Okay.
And at the time, me and Victor had a falling out. Right after, like, the moments after I gave it away, me and him had a falling out. So I felt like I wasn't really, you know, I couldn't really be their comedy night anymore.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, fine. Mm-hmm. I just concentrated on my schooling. So I went back to school and just got involved. And while Victor was running it, I was just helping out, putting together film festivals. I did things mm-hmm. for CineQuest. I was started involved event planning for those things.
Okay.
And I learned a lot from that itself. And Victor ran it like a dive bar.
Okay.
And Victor was going through a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to the point where business got pretty bad at Frascati.
Okay.
To the point where people will call in. Going like, is it comedy night? They'll be like, yes. They're like, all right, I'm not coming in tonight.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah. So and of course, like I said, because Victor grew up with Caravan and whatever like that, anything went, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So they let go of Victor.
Okay.
And I got a call from the owner.
Yeah.
And he goes, Jorge, you know, it's been a while. I think like maybe less than a year or so.
Okay.
But a good while. He goes, you know, they've been having a hard time with comedy night. It's driving away business.
Yeah.
And they're thinking of getting rid of comedy night.
Mm.
Unless I come back and fix it.
Okay.
And again, I said, well, let me think about it. let me sleep on it.
Because
not only I'm not coming back to Frascati with a blank slate anymore.
Yeah.
It already has a bad reputation in the community.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, I was going through a lot of shit at the time.
Okay.
So I don't know if I want to deal with you know.
Extra stress.
Yeah.
Because I knew by coming back for Scotty, people would automatically be on Victor's side about whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, me and Victor are super cool now. Like, we're friends. We love each other.
You know,
we hang out all the time. But just at the time, we were both going through a lot of shit.
Okay.
So when I brought it back, I knew that I had to change it up.
Yeah.
And when I brought it back, that's where the lesson of like, you know what? I'm tired of just running things like they're supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I want to embed a bit of my personality into this.
Okay.
And I think that's the biggest lesson I want to give out to the podcast listeners.
Yeah.
If you do a showcase, if you do an open mic, make sure that a part of it is related to your personality.
Okay.
Because that freed me up so much.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no longer am I coming back. Did I feel like I was creatively strained?
Yeah.
I felt like, you know what? This is my thing. I'm making my thing. Because there's a good chance it's going to fail anyway.
That's such a good outlook. Know? Everyone thinks that's negative. But going in thinking it's already done is sometimes good.
Right. And that's where I figured out is like the ship, it's sinking.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of trying to keep it afloat, like instead of covering up the holes.
Yeah.
You just got to rearrange it
Okay.
In some way.
Okay.
To make it work again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when I came back, I enlisted some of my friends.
Okay.
And we started a little comedy writing team.
Nice.
And we're like, you know what? We need to come back strong and different and more positive.
Okay.
And I got to give a shout out to Miranda, Matt Regan, and Jacob Wheels.
Okay.
And they're Rob Roy and a couple others who are not on the scene necessarily, but at the time they helped me out. I mean, because they didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
They jumped on board and they dedicated their time to help me out.
Okay.
And bring him back for Scotty. And we introduced, you know, improv, sketch. We did a thing. We wrote monologues.
Oh, nice.
So every Wednesday would be like a new set of jokes in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
So
like a Conan O'Brien vibe.
Exactly.
To it. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's an amazing writing exercise, isn't it?
Oh, dude, it's. I mean, honestly, some of the funnest times I ever had are during workshops.
Yeah.
Because you're just throwing tags at each other, trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
So I miss those days for sure. So
I'm glad you said that because I've reached out to a couple, the guys pretty much at my, well, more experienced than me, but kind of in the same stage, let's say just around a year-ish. And we haven't really gone forward with any writing workshops, but I always wondered, is it helpful? Because a lot of times stand-up is so personal and you're trying to pull stuff out and then see what parts of it have punch.
Yeah.
Can a writing team help you out?
Yes. Sorry, I answered.
Yeah, yes, it can.
But here's why. And I'm glad you asked because I just started a workshop. The first workshop session was today.
Oh, nice.
I had it earlier in the day.
I need to join.
Yes, please do. We need more people.
Okay.
But it's a workshop. But here's why.
Mm.
Because it instills a work ethic in you.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to wait for inspiration to hit you.
And most writers say that'll never happen, right?
Right.
You have to be on the typewriter in order for
the
muse to come down. And
so in some ways, when you're at a workshop, it is you sitting down in front of a typewriter and comedy.
This is my Bible right here. I don't know if
it's a good book.
You've read it.
I have this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He basically says that the muse only shows up for those who are at the typewriter or whatever it may be.
Matt brought out the war on art, right?
Yeah. The war of art.
The war of art by Preston.
Yeah. By Stephen Pressfield.
Pressfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good book.
Yeah.
But workshopping, I think is super helpful in building a work ethic, understanding that it's not just an art form. It's a craftsmanship.
Yeah.
And you really learn from others.
Yeah.
You really learn how to write for others.
Right.
And you really learn how to take in criticism from others as well.
Which is important.
Super important.
Yeah.
And on top of that, also just be more professional. Because mm-hmm. it builds trust as well.
Yeah.
There comes a point where you're like, I trust what this person's telling me because we've been in the trenches together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I highly recommend workshops. So I just started one. I hope you join.
Yeah, I
so
will.
So pretty much that's what we did for Scotty, the second iteration I came in.
Okay.
Or the third iteration. And after a while, that began to build up. And then eventually, you know, Miranda and the others, they had to move on to other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think where we are right now, we're at the fourth iteration.
Okay.
Where you know, segments were introduced, games, debates.
Yeah.
But like I said, it came from a place of like, I like doing these things.
Yeah.
As the host.
Yeah.
And this is what people forget. When you're a host, you have more influence than you think.
Okay.
And that's what to be a host, you really need to take it more seriously.
Okay.
Because you will leave an impression in the scene. You will leave an impression to young comedians.
Yeah.
And that's something I failed as well in the beginning. In the beginning, I was such an asshole because I was stressed enough.
Yeah.
So now I do the best I can, but I'm definitely confident to say I'm a lot better now.
Yeah.
To be more supportive.
Yeah.
Because it's important to help bring up the younger generation.
Yeah.
And not, you know, make it a chore for them to go to your mic and just deal with you.
Yeah.
So over time, you know, it's what I learned. It's you just gotta do things at your mic that matters to you.
Yeah.
Instill principles that are you know. And I get it. I get some shit of like, oh, you're too like anal or you're too, you know. But at the same time, I get compliments too. You know, I get compliments going like, hey, man, it's very structured. It's very on time.
Yeah, yeah.
But the important part is it works for me personally.
Yeah.
That's how the way I operate.
Yeah. It's got to be about you at some point. It has to be what, but, I mean, you can't kill yourself right, over something like an open mic.
Well, you're not getting paid for this. I'm not getting paid for it. So there's no point of dealing with each other's bullshit, essentially.
That's what I want. As someone just coming in to the scene, I can, and I said it at the top of the podcast, I'll repeat it. I'm so grateful for what you're doing, what Munoz is doing, what Atu's doing. Mike McGee, you know, he's not typically, you know, he's not just a stand up, but he's doing poet and stand up thing. But anyone going out of their way to do something for free to give us degenerates time on a mic, that's amazing, right? So yeah, what I really appreciate it. And I do like for Scotty a lot. The one thing I will say is I'm not the bluest comic on the scene, but I think I do have some fucked up ideas and premises, and I always do feel a little self-conscious once I go into some of my stuff for Scotty, because I go,
that's good. Good. You should be, because that tells me that you give a shit.
Yeah.
And that's good. Because here's the when it comes to blue material.
Yeah.
So right now, doing this for years now, I've built trust with the owners.
Yeah.
And if I know you, I know your material. Essentially, if it's funny, it's funny.
Mm.
I won't say shit.
Yeah.
I do step in occasionally if I could tell that the person...
They don't know how to deliver a joke.
well, if it's a consistent behavior.
Yeah.
Because I understand. It's like you try it out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But if they keep trying it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, man, you know, just try to gear...
Yeah, this is a coffee shop. There's a mom and there's a mom and a son.
Yeah,
trying to bond over some cappuccino right now, and you can't stop talking about your shit you had last night or something.
But like I said, if it's funny, it's funny. I won't say shit to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I do get complaints from the owners of like them hearing stuff, complaints from the customers.
Yeah,
I say I was there. Yeah. If you notice, if you go to Frascati, I'm perched up front.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not in the back. I'm up front listening to everybody.
Yes.
You know, if nobody's listening, I'm listening.
Yeah.
Because if they give me a complaint, I'm like, I was there. I heard it, and I could attest that it was funny.
Oh,
and they'll be like, and they'll trust my word on it.
Wow.
So I much prefer people come in nervous, as opposed to coming here and not give a shit.
Yeah.
I never banned anybody for Scotty for material.
Okay.
It's always based on behavior.
Ah, okay.
And that's something I want to work on with this workshop, because I've been noticing a trend from these newer generations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm dealing with a lot of interesting behavior I haven't really dealt with before.
Ah, okay.
And I don't know if it's I don't know what it's about.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is that those are the only real limitations I have for Scotty.
Okay.
Is it can't go too blue.
Yeah.
But I don't discourage it if there's like, you know, actual craftsmanship behind it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. And it kind of loops me back to your writer's workshop. So one thing I've found, and I haven't been able to get it out all the way on stage. From time to time it comes out, but stand-up comics, it's writing is great. If you're a smart writer, then you're probably going to kill it no matter what you're doing on stage, how you're standing, or what the crowd is like. But I also feel like there's this acting element or this performance element of it. And I wanted to get your opinion. Have you ever been in a writer's workshop and you come across stuff and you go, this premise and this punch or whatever it may be, it's just not strong. But a comic says, but I really want, I have this performance or this movement or this behavior behind it that I really think I can sell it. Do you think bad writing can still turn into a great performance?
Of course. Of course. Well, dude, writing is half of it. The other half is performing it.
Yeah.
And that being said, different people have different advantages over other people.
Right.
As far as their personality on stage.
Right.
So we could both do the same material, but I'm sure we'll both interpret it differently.
Right.
It might work one or the other. You know, there's no real absolutes when it comes to like the principles of comedy writing.
Okay.
It just you got to figure out what's your voice, what's your comedy voice, and what material, you know, accommodates your voice.
Right. Right.
Whether you're physical, whether you're more, you know, laid back.
Yeah.
Whether you're more, you know, aggressive.
Yeah.
All these takes time to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with writing. But it's important to have a good foundation in writing.
Okay.
But writing that accommodates you. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if you're not into, if you're more into story form,
mm-hmm.
that's what you should be writing more of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great to dabble in short form. Like, you know, set up punchline.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good to have.
Yeah.
As a training exercise.
Yeah.
But you should really be gearing that to what help what you feel best expresses your sensibility of comedy.
Okay.
And this is true for any kind of performance art.
Mm.
You know, whether it's music.
Yeah, yeah.
Or dance, whatever. Learn the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could start, you know, sculpting your sculpture out of the block of concrete.
Picasso knew to draw. Picasso was a master in the classical discipline, so he was able to invent a new discipline.
Exactly. That fitted what he liked.
Yeah.
To draw.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Same thing about comedy.
Yeah.
That's why newcomers, I tell them, first year,
mm-hmm.
don't even worry about showcasing. Don't even worry about building reputation, building.
It's great
of
advice.
That. Just fucking do your bits. Do your jokes and do all kinds of jokes. Go to all kinds of rooms.
Yeah.
Get a good feel of the range.
Yeah.
Because once you do become, you know, noticed or have built a reputation.
Yeah.
In some ways, you're limited to that type.
Yeah.
So it's important to be at a place where you're comfortable who you are as a comedic performer.
Yeah. Because if you get branded, then that's your brand.
Exactly.
And then you come up and you just start doing some more esoteric or creative stuff, and people are looking at you go, well, I wasn't expecting this, so now I'm upset.
Yeah. If you're gonna fail, fail early.
Yeah.
And if you can get banned early.
Yeah.
It's better to get banned where you're a nobody from a place than get banned where you're like 10 years in and you're like, oh shit, like, you know, it could hurt, you know, your reputation.
Yeah.
So that being said, I think that's where the writing is. The writing is just you putting in the work,
mm-hmm.
as far as, you know, mental exercises. Then when you're at the open mics, that's you working out the whole core, you know, the writing and the performance. And those two are together, you know?
Yeah.
Some do excel on writing, mm-hmm. and they'll make great comedy writers, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Some excel more on the performance, which, you know, they need writers to help them.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Especially locally, like I said, nobody's making a living off it. So
it's all the love.
Right.
We're all doing it out of the love.
You make sure you're writing stuff you'd like to write. Make sure you're performing the things the way you like to perform. And I've been there. I've been at a point where, like, I don't like this joke, but I know it gets laughs. And so that's something I need to work at. And sometimes I have jokes that take years to really develop. Where I get first half of the joke a year in, then before I know it, like 2 years later, I'm like, oh, that could fit in with that joke. And then it completes the thing. So it's very all over the place. And at the same, but like I said, at its core, you should have a very good work ethic behind it.
Yeah. Well, I'm in a good spot. Well, not the best spot, but I'm in a spot where I do have time throughout the day to write. And I do try to write. And I think about even this. So I have my little playlist, or I call it a set list. And I'm assuming it's the same thing as in music, but I have the highlights where I know this is the premise. And then I have the sub point, which I think is the punch, which is why I need a workshop. Cause I still don't even know if I understand premise punch when I'm doing my writing. I don't know if this is really a punchline.
Set up punchline. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Set up punchline.
Yeah.
Or something. I'm very, it's all kind of blurry. I don't know where one stops and the other ends and where one should be. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is I can put in the writing. The problem is the mic time with me, because I really have two rooms that I go to consistently, which is Woodham's and Caravan, because they're later, and, you know, I can put the kids to bed and whatnot.
Sure.
So yeah. I can make your mic every now and again, which I love your room. I think it's great. Like I said, the only thing with me and for Scotty is sometimes I'll be going into a bit and I'll be pushing myself because I know I need to do an act out or I need to do a performance part. And I'm like, oh, man, this may not go over well because it might be too crude for the room. But then I do it. And you've always been nice. You've never come down on me yet. So.
I'd much rather you ask for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. Commit to the bit. Go yeah. for it. And we'll see how it goes.
That's right.
And you'll be surprised. Maybe it'll work out great.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a lesson in adjusting.
Yeah.
You won't know until you do it.
Yeah. And I also like your advice about don't think about showcasing or doing anything more. Just what I'm trying to tell myself is get up there and try and remember your lines.
There you go.
That's what I'm trying to do. For the first year, if I can get up for 1 year twice a week and just remember my lines and not forget them, which I have forgotten them on multiple occasions. But then, okay, year one, I did what I was supposed to do.
There you go. Yeah. That's it. Have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun. Because there'll be a point where you're going to reflect of like, okay, am I actually having fun now?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that happens with every hobby or yeah. every interest or every passion. You go, oh, my goodness.
Definitely.
So actually, that's a good transition into another question. Obviously, you're a very creative person, musician.
Oh, you're too kind.
you're doing comedy. You're you were in helping out with movie stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
What is it about stand-up that drew you more so than the others? Or is stand-up kind of on equal footing to some of your other creative pursuits? Oh, photography. I forgot to say photography, which I...
Sure.
I don't want to get out of here without asking you something about photography, too.
Okay. Let's see. That's a good question. That's a very... honestly, dude, I don't know where the fuck it comes from sometimes.
Yeah.
I look,
that's a good answer. That's my answer.
I look back. I'm like, why do I do the things I do?
Yeah.
As far as stand-up, I think it's just another way to honestly express myself.
Okay.
There's a certain honesty to it.
Yeah.
Doesn't leave room for interpretation.
Yeah.
I say what I mean, or I try to convey what I mean. Comedy was there at a very low point of my life. And it's an easy access to get immediate feedback.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really bullshit your way into comedy.
You don't think so?
Not really.
You got to be honest with what you're trying to convey. Well, actually,
what I mean is that you're bound to bomb.
Mm.
Everybody's bombing.
Yes.
Everybody, from the most famous person, the famous comedian,
yeah.
to the open mic who started last week.
Yeah.
Everybody had the same feeling of bombing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like MMA fighting, where no matter how good of a fighter you are, there's still a chance you get knocked out.
Yeah, you can get punched in the face even when you're doing good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a certain thrill to it that I gravitate towards.
Yeah.
But I met a lot of good people doing stand up, and I just enjoy comedy so much. As a kid, I always enjoyed comedy, and it really mixes a lot of things I love to do, theater, writing, So many things that could be applied into stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, it's all you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to rely on other people necessarily to make the execution.
Yeah.
You know, it's really up to you. And I'm definitely of that type of if anybody's going to fuck this up, it's going to be me.
Yeah.
I don't want to blame nobody.
That's how I am too.
Kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So, because I'm working on it, but you know, I'm not exactly a strong. I don't really work well with others sometimes.
Okay.
And that's something I really need to work on.
Yeah.
Not to say that I have in the past. I have great experience with some people.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it's a conscious thing I know of like, okay, at least with stand up.
Do you have a loner?
I have that control.
Do you have a loner streak in you?
A what?
Loner. Like a lone? Have you heard loner?
No. Like am I lonely?
Oh no, a person who like a lone wolf. You heard the term lone wolf? Do you have that streak in you?
I definitely yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have
do
that.
Do you
too.
Have that?
Oh yeah. All my family, my wife, my everyone just considers me, Matthew's just off doing whatever Matthew does. And I,
that's exactly me, dude. Yeah. My family, like, it's funny. Like, even my family's like, I don't know why you even get yourself in these kind of things. It's not, it's not that you're making money out of it. It's not like, but it's just, it's something you're gravitated towards. Sometimes there's no explanation for it.
Are you more comfortable in your own head or talking it out in a podcast form like this? Because I'm in my head. Everyone's in their head. I mean, it's human existence. But I'm in my head, and sometimes I enjoy it so much where 45 minutes will go by, and I'll go, this is reality. I'm at work, or, you know, I'm supposed to be talking with someone else, or, you know.
I daydream a lot, so definitely in my head.
There we go.
Head. I've fucking built relationships in my head, or built friendships, or built opportunities.
And that's where the funny happens.
And I get emotional.
Yeah.
Like, why am I emotional over some shit that's not even real? It's in my head.
That's me.
You know? Like, just like, oh, yeah, what if this happens? That happens. Oh, my God, what a beautiful scene. And, and I start crying. I'm such an idiot, you know?
Yeah, that's me too.
So I definitely hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm comfortable being alone. I'm comfortable trying to take on projects on my own. But what's even more odd is when I get into these narratives in my head, it'll be an entire universe, like you said, that's been created and destroyed within 15 minutes. And then I go, what the fuck was that last 15 minutes all about? You know?
Yeah.
Or even longer. Yeah. So that's and, you know, this podcast is all about you. But that's one of the things that got in, is I started actually writing some of the stuff that I thought was funny in these stories down years ago. I go, at some point, I want to try getting on stage and see if I can turn these things into jokes. And another thing that I found is that talking about the being honest and the genuine is, a lot of times you'll say some jokes because we have to involve the relationships in our life and the experiences that we had, or even just a commentary. Like you said, you were doing the monologues.
Yeah.
Where you're commenting on whatever current events may be. You have to think, why do I think this is funny? If I think this is funny, it means I have a point of view that is filtering and seeing this particular event, experience, or emotion in a certain way.
Sure, yeah.
Then why am I seeing it that way? And then you have to say, is it funny for everyone or only me, right? And so it gets to a thing where I get so introspective writing.
I don't get that far in asking why. I just do it.
Yeah,
I just fucking do it.
Okay.
And
I'm even more neurotic than you.
Perhaps. But maybe I should be more like you. I should probably be more thoughtful like you. I think that's what I'm learning here. Because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but, you know, I look back. I mean, a lot of times I get really hard on myself to a very bad degree. But I look back, I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, I've met so many great people.
Yeah.
In comedy and film and so many other things and music. And I think ultimately that's what really propels you forward. Because I would have stopped comedy a while back if it wasn't for the people I was surrounding with.
You got a good tribe?
A good tribe that's always changing.
Yeah.
And I feel better about that sometimes. I'm like, you know what? I have so many friends, but like, I don't spend as much time as in a group as I should. I don't know. Like I haven't hung out with nobody from my high school, and I see my other high school colleagues, they're still hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what that says about me, but.
Yeah, probably not too much. I think I have one or two buddies from high school that I still hang out with, but
that's awesome. I'm jealous of that. So a part of me is very much have like a very wandering.
Yeah. No. I'm. Yeah.
You know, aspect of doing things and.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, again, there's always pros and cons with it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Going back to your question, it's just I think you just got to do. You just got to keep doing the things you do.
Yeah.
But as long as you're interested in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you're not interested, it's gonna come through.
Because money is gonna come and go.
Yeah.
But time you're never gonna get back.
Yep.
So, make the best of your time.
Definitely. Last one. Photography and comedy. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm going to share with you an excuse that I realize there's some parallels.
Interesting. I'd love to hear it.
I'm not a good photographer. The best pictures I take are with iPhones.
hey man, it works. It works, dude.
They've gotten so good now, right?
Yeah.
But I do have a camera, and sometimes I don't get the shot. Now, these days, almost everything can be fixed post-production, right? You have Lightroom, you have Photoshop, whatever else, and you can do what you need to do.
Sure.
But I've caught myself on multiple occasions, and I know this is a cop-out, say, oh, this fucking camera, I forgot this, or I didn't get this aperture, it's the camera or the lens, or and I blame the camera.
Mm.
Likewise, I've caught myself with comedy going, this audience isn't so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not able to get the laughs, or I can't get them engaged or something. I think in looking at those, and even as I'm saying those things, I know I'm wrong and I'm shielding my ego. What's your opinion on that? Do you think with your camera, it's never about the camera getting a bad shot, it's the photographer getting the bad shot? And then do you think the comedian should be able to rock any room?
I think you know the answer to this one. I think this is
Yeah.
It's definitely not the camera. It's definitely not the audience.
Yeah.
It's cringe-worthy.
Yeah.
It's so cringe when you see a performer, a comedic stand-up going like, oh, come on, guys, laugh. Because, you know, start shitting the car. It's so cringe.
Yeah.
Because...
Or how about this one? Oh, that killed the other audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are pretty bad habits that people should get rid of on so many levels, because it just gives off a bad impression of you.
Yeah.
But I can tell you a story.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a guy I went to school with,
mm-hmm.
who's a great cinematographer.
Okay.
Film camera.
Yeah.
And photography.
Yeah.
And he won the highest achievement at the university for cinematography. So this guy could work with, you know, thousands, like, cameras that cost thousands of dollars,
yeah,
fancy ones,
yeah,
all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I really looked up to him because, like, man, that's pretty awesome. Like, he could work with all these types of visuals.
Yeah.
So then he gets the highest award. And so finally on graduation, the camera that he brought to best, you know, take pictures of this event in his life, is mm-hmm. this milestone.
Yeah.
Was a disposable camera at Walgreens.
Baller.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you have fucking so many cameras available to you, and you brought this.
Yeah.
But that said something about it.
Yeah.
Was that it doesn't matter what camera you're using.
It's my eye.
It's your eye.
Yeah.
It's how you are seeing it.
Yeah.
And making it work well with what you have.
Yeah.
And that's how I shoot photography as well.
Okay.
I don't have the fanciest lens or the camera.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do have, you know, at the same time, I don't plan too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go like, oh, you know, I want the sunroom to be this precise.
Okay.
I just go with the flow and see what happens. Yeah. And
the composition will reveal itself.
Right.
Okay.
But the point is, you need to take a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
Right? That's the great thing about digital.
Yeah.
Is you take a shitload of pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to find a good gem in those stacks.
Yeah.
Comedy, same thing.
Yeah.
You got to tell a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
Good jokes, bad jokes, they come from the same place.
Yeah.
Your head.
Right.
Right? Shitty waves and great waves, they come from the same ocean.
Mm.
So that's why it's important to not really put it on the audience, because you could have a bad audience,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Just do your time.
Yeah.
Do work stuff out.
Yeah.
Or even take the time to feel the crowd out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see someone doing that, they earn so much respect.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that Faco does so great. That's something I learned from him, is that I've gone to so many matches with Faco, so many shows.
Yeah.
This guy could go with super clean or super dirty, all kinds of crowds.
Yeah.
Crowds that hate comedy.
Yeah.
And he will work them. And there's something to be said of, and the thing you don't hear from Faco is he never complains about the crowd.
So
never.
So
you know, before you
go.
So that being said, tell as many jokes.
Yeah.
You'll have gems eventually.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's all on you. And again, you could have a shitty crowd.
Yeah.
But you're not helping by shitting on them for being a bad crowd.
I'm so glad you brought up Faco, because the main question, I want to get Faco on here also, but the main story that I want to share with him, and this was a learning experience, you know, a couple months in, I had gone up maybe two or three spots before him. And I was staring into the eyes of, you know, I mean, you do enough open mics, you see the eyes of the drunken, tired, broken down. You're almost staring into the eyes of zombies,
yeah.
Right? Because their faces, their face has gone long. Their eyes have a gloss to them, like something's wrong, right? And of course, you know, no one laughed. And I walked off stage, and I didn't say it to anyone, but I said it in my head. I go, this is a dead crowd. You know, no one here will be laughing. And he went up like second to last, or he might have even gone up last. He got the crowd rocking.
Yeah.
It was like within maybe 45 seconds, and there might have been some people who knew him there, so they were like, fuck, oh. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. His material and the way he did it, he was so lively. A lot of times he's a laid-back performer,
mm-hmm.
but this one he was leaning in. You're and right. He was moving, and he was animated, and he was slapping things and smashing. I go, that's, you know, again, I hadn't seen Facco perform that much at that point, but I go, this is a different guy performing right now. Not only is it a different guy, but he's rocking the room. And now the room was only maybe 5-6 people at that point.
Right.
But these were 5 or 6 severely drunk people, and he rocked them. So that was my lesson right there. I go, it's on me. It's always on me. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. It comes easier to Falco because he put in the time, years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he rocked it. I mean, Falco started at the same time I did. Man, like seeing him grow has been awesome.
Yeah.
Another thing, which I think is a comedian should not do, is feeling proud for offending people. That's a common one these days, I'm noticing.
Okay.
Of people going like, oh, yeah, I offended somebody. It's like, what, did you make them laugh? No, they got offended. Well, did you do your job, really? Like, you know, what's the point? So I
think making them uncomfortable might be okay, but only so that they have a release when they laugh.
Exactly.
So there's a difference between being offended and them shutting off and being uncomfortable and then jumping back in, I would imagine.
I mean, at that point, you're just doing spoken word. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, at that point, you're just, you know, not doing comedy or stand-up.
That's so good.
So, but, you know, the biggest lesson here with the camera and with the comedy is definitely don't blame the machine. Don't blame it.
Yeah.
But, you know, just deal with what you have.
Yeah.
And just fucking rock with it.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Answers my question. That was beautiful. So, can you tell our listeners, our 5 listeners out there, where you're going to be?
5 very important listeners.
They're extremely
love
important.
Love you guys. Thank you for tuning in.
Out of Oslo, Norway.
Sweet.
Where are you going to be performing? How do people look you up? What's going on?
Well, you know, I have a weekly mic Wednesday nights at Cafe Frascati in downtown San Jose. That is 315 South 1st Street. Every Wednesday at 8 o'clock, please stop by. This month, we're doing a charity drive. All tips are going towards blankets for the family shelter in East San Jose. And we're collecting as much as we can all month long. And I'm just around.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I got a show.
Instagram? You got an Instagram page that you like to promote or not really?
Follow. Good one.
Okay.
Follow for Scotty Comedy on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Nice.
You can follow me personally at Jorge M. Sanchez. My photography is on my Instagram as well.
Nice.
J.M. Sanchez.
Okay.
Let's see. Anything I want to put out there? I'm pretty sure I got a show this Saturday, but I totally forgot.
Okay. That's cool.
When is this being released?
Well, I think I only have a few clips to do it, to splice things together. So if you're okay with everything, I could have this out tomorrow.
Sweet. Yeah. Whenever you can.
Okay.
And yeah, please come out. It's pretty a lot of fun. And thank you, Matthew or Matt?
Either or. Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll go with Matthew. Yeah.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank
Am I making sense? This has been one of the most sensible podcasts I've had.
Who else have you talked to?
So I had Kike on.
Kike,
my
I love
most
that guy.
Recent one. Yeah. Oh, man. You know what? Yeah. And Kike is so silly and funny on stage, but once you start talking to him, he's a deep dude.
Oh, he's very depressing. I know.
He is a deep dude. And then, of course, I had my buddy, some newer guys, Jacob and Derek Demise, and I've had...